Welcome to episode 81 of the Necronomicon.com. I am James Sabata, horror author, screenwriter, co-host of the podcast you're listening to right now, and while I'm sometimes a tiny bit afraid of clowns, there's something about art that makes me want to cuddle with him.
And I'm Don Guillory, author, historian, educator, co-host of this podcast, and no hugs coming for me.
So the guest today was going to be Art the Clown, but we got like 10 minutes in and the dude didn't say anything. So then I was like, all right, we'll bring on David Howard Thornton instead. So David, welcome to the show, man.
Hey.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, now I can talk.
Woohoo! So why don't you tell our listeners a bit about yourself, and if you want to talk about how you became Art or anything else, feel free to do so.
Yeah, I was born a poor black child. No, that's
he hates these cans.
We've finally gotten that joke on the air. No one has gone there yet. I've been waiting all this time.
People have gotten mad at me for doing that joke. Because I like to do that for my mic check sometimes. I've done like theater. And I did that one time with a bunch of like young 20-something-year-olds when I was doing Grinch, and you just hear this collective gasp go throughout the cast. We're like, oh! I'm like, it's from The Jerk.
It's hilarious.
Was this Steve Martin, the Rachel Dolezal thing?
Yeah, I guess. I'm like, it was like the older people in the cast were laughing their asses off, like especially my director. He's like, that's great. And the young tween is like, I'm offended. I'm like, oh, God, no.
Too bad.
It's one of the best comedies ever written.
It is. Next time, be like, it's from The Jerk. I took these lines and this joke and this ashtray.
I don't need anything else.
Right.
Except for this cell phone. I need that.
Oh,
and this stool. I need this stool, this cell phone, and these jokes. That's all I need. And this hat. And
Art's got a great hat. Is that the hat?
Yeah. That hat is the biggest pain in the ass to wear. I tell you what. It's always like either the string is breaking, the little elastic string, or it's falling off. And we're having to like duct tape it to my head. Is we hate that hat.
All I thought when I saw the hat was the TV show Oz. There was a character called Adebisi, mm-hmm. and he had like this small little wool knit cap that he would wear, but he would wear it like on the side of his head, and it never fell off. And that was all I thought of when I saw the hat on Art.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's nice. Like Adebisi.
It's movie magic there, because God, when the cameras aren't rolling, that thing is the biggest pain in the butt.
That's what's really in the bag. It's just a bunch of little hats with more strings. That way, if they break, you just switch them out.
Yep, that and duct tape.
If anyone ever asks you, "Hey, what's really in the bag?" just be like, "Toothbrush, toothpaste." Why?
Yeah. You know, my little manicure set and all that kind of stuff. Got to keep the nails nice, because all the digging into flesh kind of ruins the nails after a while. So, got to keep those cuticles cute.
Oh man.
But anyway, back to who I am.
Sure. Or no, black child.
Yeah, no. God, no. That would be weird. I'd be like an albino. It's just like, no. But yeah, I'm originally from Huntsville, Alabama. That's where I grew up, born and raised. Yeah. So it's an interesting place, because it's like, it's not what you think of when you think of Alabama, because you know, people are like, oh, you're from Alabama. I'm like, no, I'm from the good part of Alabama. I'm from the NASA part. Exactly. Like, my dad worked for NASA for like 40 years. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was on the original von Braun team. He was with the Army Missile Command when the German scientists came over and they teamed up together. That's my side. We're a family of scientists and teachers. So it's like Huntsville is like a big, huge melting pot in the middle of this wasteland of ignorance, as I like to say.
So nice.
Like, yeah. I'm probably going to get a lot of hate mail now from Alabama. Hey, how dare you say that about our state? It's like, guys, you just elected a football coach that doesn't know what the three branches of government are. Come on. And two or three years ago, you almost elected a guy that was a pedophile. Come on. Oh, I'm getting so much hate mail now.
Oh, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. They send it all to James. They don't send it to me because they're like,
it's really true. When we get any feedback, whether it's positive or negative, I'm the one that always gets it. Nobody sends anything to Don.
Yeah.
It's become like this ongoing joke to me. Like, did he like take his email and like put a forwarding address on it? Is that what happened? You know, I don't know.
But, no, they've heard my rants on the show, so they know that since I have a cemetery behind my house, I can easily hide the bodies. So.
Oh, that's good. That's
show up. Awesome.
He's a black guy in Mississippi. He's terrifying. Yeah. They know you're former military and I'm not, so they're not as scared of me. That's all it
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
If they only knew the truth about 90% of former military, they wouldn't care.
Oh, I know. It's funny how that they also think, yeah, everybody that's in the military is conservative. I'm like, no, oh no.
No,
like my grandfather was like one of the biggest liberals you would know back in. He was like, you know, a very openly, you know, liberal minded person during the civil rights movement and, you know, in conservative Alabama, you know. Lieutenant colonel in the army, and he didn't give a crap. He said what he wanted to say.
Well, when you reach a certain level, everybody's like, crap, he's a lieutenant colonel, we can't say shit back. Yeah, anyway,
exactly.
So
well, there was a thing, it was actually in the newspapers during when Wallace shut down all the schools because of this, you know, trying to dealing with segregation. He was not allowing any of the kids in the school, and my grandfather marched up to the elementary school, and she's holding his hand, and you know, he's all these military guys are outside, all army guys are outside of the school, and he's you will stand down right now. I'm your commanding officer. I don't give a flying fuck what this governor has to say. Every child here, regardless of race, is going to get an education. Blah, blah, blah. He was just chewing these guys out, and people took pictures of it, and it was like in newspapers worldwide because, you know, it's like, wow, there's this white man standing up for black people in Alabama during the civil rights movement like this. It was like, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. We're pretty proud of him. He was a man that just spoke his mind and didn't care. I was like, he probably could have gotten higher up in the military than he did, but he was just like, he didn't care. He was true to himself. He didn't believe in kissing ass or anything like that to get higher ranking or anything like that. He was a self-made man, and I respect him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else about him than what you've said here today, and I respect the hell out of him now.
So. He was awesome. He was awesome.
Can't even imagine.
Yeah. Lieutenant Colonel James L. Studdard.
Nice.
Yep. It was like one of my fondest memories of him was when I was a kid, because he would take my sister and I out to Redstone Arsenal to show us where he used to work. And one time, like, all these MPs stopped us. And my grandfather was a short guy. He was about 5'4", 5'5". But he had like the Napoleon complex, so he was just like, he didn't care. I just remember him hopping out of the car. He's like a little 70-year-old man, and this MP is trying to stop us. Like, you will stand down right now. I'm Lieutenant Colonel James L. Studdard. I worked here on this arsenal. The reason you have a job out here on this arsenal right now is because men like me, blah, blah, blah. I'm showing my grandkids where I used to work, and you will not stop me. I don't care what you say is supposed to be, you know, top secret. I was like, whoa. I was like, that's awesome, because you just see this big, huge, like 6-foot mountain of a man just cowering before my grandfather like that. I was just like, he's like, yes, sir, yes, sir. Okay, you may pass.
God, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I was like, man, he just pulled rank. And I think part of it, he was just trying to show off for us too, but I didn't care. I was like, that's my granddad. Woo! My grandmother's like, Shug, please stop. Please stop. It's okay.
No, man, that's prime example of what we should all be doing, which is wherever your voice lies, being able to use it for people that don't have that level. Like, yeah. No matter what level you're on, there's somebody that doesn't have the audience or the privilege or whatever else that you have. So using that voice for somebody else is like just fucking great. Doing it at the time that he did is fucking phenomenal.
I agree. That's, you know, that's why I have, you know, that's something I really had to think about, you know, during these past few years with, you know, Air Schittler in power, you know. Egoff.
Well, we love you already. You're already invited back for like 5 more episodes.
Oh, yeah. that's something I had to really think about because, you know, some people are like, Dave, you should be quiet about your views and everything right now because you're probably going to piss off a lot of fans. And I'm like, you know what? It's like, you look at Spider-Man, great power, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And when you look at all the stuff that has been going on these past few years, you know, just some horrible, horrible things. I couldn't stay silent. You know, you got kids in cages and, you know, they're, you know, forcing women to have hysterectomies against their will. And this is horrible stuff. And I'm like, I can't keep my mouth shut. I got to speak out. You know, I got to build awareness for this. And yeah. So I that's why I was like, OK, if I lose some fans, I lose some fans. But that's, you know, I'm not going to stop being who I am and speaking out against things that I don't agree with. If they disagree with me, then that's their problem. That's for them to deal with. Right. I'm trying to let people know what is going on and that this is wrong.
And I think that we look for people that we admire, and whether we agree with them or not, hearing their point of view still gets into our heads on some level, right?
It does.
And even like I have a couple heroes that are Trump supporters and stuff. And I don't know. I can't imagine being like, I can't watch this because so-and-so made it and feels this way in real life. Like, I can grasp the whole, I don't want to directly pay you money if you're going to donate it to the campaign. I get all that.
Right.
I don't get, like, if you look at any movie, this is kind of a weird tangent, but I think I have a point here. You look at any movie, like a Marvel movie, right? And you look at those credits. Like, I'm sorry. You think every one of those fucking people voted for who you voted for?
Exactly.
Like, so what are you going to do? You're going to count them up and you're going to like, 33 people on the camera crew felt this way and 47 felt this way. So no, that's fucking insane.
But that's what's the beauty about America is like you do have people from both sides of the aisle, but they're working together to create something awesome. It's like, yeah. You know, with our film, even we have Trump supporters in our cast and crew, mm-hmm. and that's okay because we work together to create a work of art. No pun intended. It's just like, that's the beauty of it. And that's what we should be doing. You find ways to work together to create and do great things for our nation. Despite what your preferences are, you can butt heads on certain things. Like, I disagree with this and I disagree with that, but you can put those things aside to work together. Politics are in the arts. They've always been in the arts.
Yeah. I feel like the arts are inherently political, like either direction. Like, they're always fighting whatever the establishment is at the moment on some level.
Exactly. It's the social commentary.
Absolutely. Right. Somebody should start a podcast about that.
I know. No,
you mentioned that. You were a theater major, correct?
Actually, no. I have done theater my whole entire life, but I didn't get my degree in that. I got my degree in elementary education with a minor in history.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Pragmatic, you know, when I went to college. I was like, you know, as much as I love acting, I was like, it's not necessarily a stable career path. You know, it's like, I'd rather be able to have a stable income and be able to support a family, blah, blah, blah. And I come from like 4 generations of teachers. So I was like, you know, I love kids. I love to educate people too. And, you know, I'm a consummate learner as well, you know, because I think every teacher needs to always be learning new things as well. So I was like, I'll go down this path. And so I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And I can do theater on the side. I can do community theater, whatever. And I'll scratch that itch. But then my mom passed away while I was in college. And that kind of changed my whole perspective on life, because our final conversation with each other, she tried to impart some last bits of wisdom to me. And she's like, you know, I have regrets in my life. There are things I wanted to do I never did because I was afraid of doing it. And I don't want you to live that same type of life. I want you to go out and do the things you want to do, not things you have to do with your life. And she didn't flat out tell me, don't be a teacher, go into acting. She just kind of put those seeds there. And it was about a year later when I was going through a lot of other stuff. I had a horrible year after my mom passed away. A lot of personal stuff going on in my life, and a downward spiral. And that's when I was like, I'm not happy. And I'm like, what's going to make me happy? And I was in my classroom one day reading stories to my kids, doing my internship in the schools. And I was doing my little voices for the characters, and the kids were laughing and having fun with that. And they're like, oh, can we have another story? And I'm like, okay, sure. We have a little bit of time. I'll do another story. I did that. And I was like, wow, I'm getting more fulfillment out of entertaining my students right now than actually teaching them. I think this is what I really want to do. This is what fulfills me. And so I called my dad up that night. And like I said, my dad's a NASA engineer, so I was expecting the engineer type of mindset, like, well, you put all this time and effort for this and teach us a stable career path, so this is what you need to do. And instead, I got the opposite reaction from him. He was like, oh, great. Your mom and I always thought this is what you need to do with your life, but we didn't want to tell you what to do with your life. We want you to live your own life. But you go ahead and finish up your take a year off, get your head back in the game, and then – finish up your degree. You only have one semester left, so just do that and then go do what you want to do. But at least you'll have a degree to fall back on if you ever need it.
Right.
And that's what I did. And I haven't looked back since.
Can I just tell you how much I love your family? Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so jealous right now.
Oh, because I wasn't expecting, because I have so many actor friends that their parents, when they said to them that they wanted to be an actor, they had the opposite response. They're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you wasting your life this way? That's, you're never going to have a career. My dad has always been 100% supportive of it.
Yeah, my dad was like that. He was very much get a degree, but mm-hmm. follow your dreams. And then if your dreams fail, you can still have a place to crash at night while you work on your next dream. And yeah. My mom's very much the opposite. My mom, like, oh, you're still writing? Yes, yes, I am.
So, you guys are lucky. Both my parents were like, fuck your dreams, go get a job.
Yeah.
Is that how you ended up so angry?
And I did have to do that for years. I was waiting tables for years because I was like the one job where I could actually have my days free to audition. I usually worked at night waiting tables. It was more flexible that way. So it's like, yeah, sure. And it sucked. Oh, my God. I waited tables for 13 years. It sucked.
Yeah. Definitely. I never did it, but I did a couple other things like it, and I lasted maybe 6 months. So 13 years is impressive to me.
Yeah, that's where I had to put my acting skills to the test, because, man, sometimes I really wanted to just go off on people, especially you got your typical Karens in there where they're like, I didn't get enough ranch dressing on the side of my salad.
I'm starting to understand where Art gets his calling to kill.
Oh, yeah. I kind of pull from that. It's just especially because I waited for like 3 years. I waited tables on the Upper East Side of Manhattan for the richest of the rich. Oh, my God, these people. They live in their own little bubble of just like they don't know how the world really is outside of that little bubble in Carnegie Hill. And it's just like, oh, my God. There's like this one day I was coming into work. I wasn't even full uniform yet. I was going back downstairs to change and all that. But this woman knew I worked there, and she grabs my arm, which ticks me off anyway, because like, I don't know you. Do not grab my arm. And she pulls me over to her table, and she's like, excuse me, but look at this. And I'm like, what's the matter? She's like, well, I told my waiter that I only wanted 5 cubes of ice in my water, and he gave me 6. What are you going to do about this?
Wow.
And I'm like, well, just give it a few minutes and it'll become water.
Right?
And I just walked away because I'm like, I didn't care. I wasn't on the clock. She wasn't my table. screw her. This is like such a first world problem right here. It's just like, oh, you've got too much, you know, solid water in your liquid water. Oh, no. Oh, no. And then I come back after I was on the clock, and she's like, yoo-hoo, yoo, snapping her finger at me. And she's like, look at this. Look at this. And there's this big puddle of water on the table. And I'm like, what happened? And she's like, well, I didn't want that extra cube of ice in my water, so I took it out and put it on the table, and look what happened. I'm like, look, it became water.
Wow. Wow. Science.
Wow. Science. Science. I'm like, yep, this is like, this is, this.
I'm all for going back to the Eisenhower tax rates.
Oh, my God. It's just like... Speaking of tax, I think sometimes we just need to have a stupidity tax. It's just
that. Oh, most definitely.
It's like, my God, it's like, please, please. Because this was, it's like, really, you're going to like cause big, huge commotion over this of all things going on in the world? This is the big, I would hate to see how you respond to a real crisis.
Right?
Like, jeez. Yeah, it's like, I took care of a dying mother for 2 years. It's like, I'd love to see how you respond to something like what I had to deal with, you know, when I would have to pick her up off the floor when she was too weak, you know, and she fell down in the bathroom. And you know, it was like, these are the things I had to deal with. And but, oh, no, you had too much ice in your water. It's like, good God, get over yourself. But I had to keep my one side.
Right? My one regret with this story is that it wasn't your waiting tables, because you could have like reached into her glass and pulled one out and been like, there, problem solved.
Oh, no, I did. My last day waiting tables was a wonderful experience too, because it was right before I started doing conventions, and I was about to even just put in my 2 weeks notice anyways, because it's like, I'm done. And it was because we had a douchebag for assistant managers. This guy was also a waiter at the restaurant, and he would take off work for like 3 or 4 weeks at a time, and just abruptly, and we all had to cover his shifts. He was just a douchebag. Everybody mm-hmm. hated this guy. And we had a day where right at the beginning of summer, we had a heat wave here in New York, and our air conditioning broke at work. So it was hot and miserable in there. And then we got this like huge dinner rush, and it was just myself and another waiter on the floor for like 20 plus tables. And all these people came in at the same time. So I had like 10 tables come in at the exact same time. I'm going crazy trying to take all these orders, because we do bottle service, everything at this restaurant. And a new table comes down. I just put like 3 tables orders in. I'm over there trying to get all their stuff from the bar and their bread and all that on this huge tray loading up. And the manager's like, I want you to go take that table, these 2 girls that came in, because I think he thought they were hot. He's like, go take their order. I'm like, they just sat down. They're okay. I even went by and said, I'll be right with you. It's like, well, I want you to go take their order right now. I'm like, dude, I got like other tables right now I got to take care of before I get to them. I'll get to them. He's like, no, I want you to do that now. I was like, dude, okay, here, either you help me or you shut up and let me do my job. He's like, what? I'm like, let me slow it down for you. Either you help me or you shut up and let me do my job. He's like, oh, you go home right now. I'm like, I'm not going to go home right now when this place just got slammed. I'm not leaving this poor guy by himself. You can fuss at me later at the end of the shift, but right now, this stuff's got to get taken care of. Right. And I went and took care of my tables, and I come back, put all these orders in, took that table's order, put it in. And he's over there, and he's like, okay, when are you going home? And I was like, I will go home at the end of the shift or once it slows down. But right now, it's too important. I can't leave this whole restaurant in this kind of state right now. It's already crazy as enough it is, and you're refusing to help. So, yeah. He's like, okay, well, I'm the manager. You're fired. I'm like, okay, fine. Bye. And I have all these tables trying to flag me down. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't help you anymore. I no longer work here. Best of luck. And they're all like, what?
Would you just point to the guy and you're like, but he can help you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. And good. He's just like, what? I'm like, bye. And so I came back in like 2 weeks later after my first convention to get my last paycheck. And the owner was there, and he's like, David, I heard about what happened. I'm sorry about what happened. So we ended up firing him. And we just wanted to know, do you want to come back at work? I'm like, no, I'm good. I don't need this kind of stress in my life anymore.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was just a nice way to go out. Like, yeah, fuck you. It was very satisfying. It was very satisfying. Because, God, it's such a, you know, working in any kind of like public service, like waiting tables or, you know, retail or anything like, it's so stressful and so, it can be so soul sucking at times because you see the worst out of people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like people
I worked
just,
in department stores and that was bad enough.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's just like the way people treat people is just like they think of you as, you know, their servant. And that you're
basically
less than them. And I'm like, no, I'm just working a job like you work a job. This is a job. It's like there's no reason for you to treat me like I am less than human right now.
And that's the weird thing about it is the folks who complain about, you know, somebody at McDonald's or, you know, a standard sit down restaurant or any other type of job that they try to deem as unskilled labor. You got to realize like they're doing something you're either unwilling to do or mm-hmm. incapable of doing. You know, if it's, oh, I don't feel like cooking, I'm going to go to the drive thru and pick something up. Like, why do you need to treat them like shit? You know, and not only that, you don't fuck with anybody who's preparing your food. Oh. In any way, shape, or form.
Oh, yeah, no, that's
even
that's
if you don't have
just,
you know, simple respect for people. Like, common sense should tell you, like, I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
I might get a little something extra.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like I look at the kitchen staff in these restaurants. Those guys work their tails off. Mm-hmm. They're back there in, like, especially, like, when summertime, and they're still having to be that back there in the kitchen with all the heat from all the ovens and the fires mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff, and they're in there just they got all these orders coming in at once. It's like it's the multitasking they have to go through. It's just insane in itself. It's like people don't understand unless you've worked these jobs how hard they can really be.
Right.
I look at every time that I hear the term essential worker, and yet I never hear people going, there aren't enough nurses working and there aren't enough doctors. It's always, why isn't anybody here to serve me? Why can't I get an $8 beer that I could buy at home for way cheaper? Why can't I? You know, it's always essential workers seem to be the people that we've been shitting on nonstop who don't deserve $15 an hour.
Yep.
And I find it very interesting that that's suddenly essential.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. I'm like when I go out and eat, where I go to a store, anything like I am like the most easygoing person because I know what it's like to work those type of jobs. I know what it's like. And I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, if it takes a waiter 15 minutes just to even come greet my table, if I look around and see the restaurant is extremely busy at the time, I understand. I'm like, oh, they're probably in the weeds right now. They'll get to me when they can because they've got like
right. So
many other tables, because I've had that happen to me before, like where I've been the only server on and I have 20 tables come in at the same time. And I'm like, oh.
Or you're stuck with some lady bitching about her ice and you can't get to your table.
Oh, yeah, I've had that. You already get those people when you're doing bottle service. Like, oh, I don't like this wine. Let me have another bottle. Oh, I don't like this one either. Let me try this one. Let me try. They're treating like the wine like it's Baskin Robbins, where they can try every flavor before they. You're just like, oh my God.
Can I have a scoop of the Beaujolais.
I've had that happen, and then they're like, oh, okay, I'm just gonna go with the first bottle I had. It's like, it's like. It's like 20 minutes later. She's like,
she's drunk now. She doesn't need a bottle.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Oh my gosh. Oh,
I gotta tell you, when you were telling the story about the guy that got fired and and let you go and everything. All I could picture was the pizzeria scene with Art, because you were talking about the two hot girls coming in, and then you you mentioned like what the people in the back cooking are going through, and in my head I was like, and then some clown comes in and blows up the bathroom.
And I've had that happen on jobs too, where someone has gone in there and blown up a bathroom like that. I'm like, I am not paid enough to clean that up.
You know what? I don't know if this has happened to James, but you admitted it happened to you. It happened to me as well. And that was my reaction was, you better be paying me more for this. Uh-huh. It was Christmas. And this was back when I used to work retail. I was working at Bath and Body Works. I don't think I'm revealing anything, James. This isn't a new story for you. I know for a while, it's like every show, something was new. And this older, the company rule was, we don't have a bathroom, right? That was the line that they would give us. Like, we do not have a public bathroom. We don't have one. We don't have one. Tell people we don't have one. And my other manager, or the manager above me, because I was the assistant manager, let this, you know, this older lady use the bathroom. And then she comes out and she's like, oh, thank you, but I'm sorry. I think I might have made a mess. And she like just kind of slinks out, right?
Oh, no.
And one of the girls, because it was just me and like 20 women that worked in the store. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls comes out, she's like, oh my God. That basically the same way the pizza parlor owner reacted.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, what happened? She's like, it's a huge mess in there. I'm like, what are you talking about? I go in, it's like out of the toilet, on the floor, like, you know, it was just like the toilet had overflowed. I'm going, and I looked at the manager. I said, I can't believe this. I think I even said, I can't believe this shit. And I thought in my head, I'm like, I don't mean to make a pun right now, but God damn, this is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments where you were in so much disbelief that it actually took place that you couldn't even concentrate on being mad at that moment, and you got mad later when you thought about it.
Because you're just like, how did this happen? How? Yeah. How did this get there and there?
Why is it on the ceiling?
And especially when it's like a little old lady, you're like, what? Because something like that happened at one of my old jobs too. It was in a pizza place that I worked at. It was this old couple that came in all the time. We could not stand them because they were just the most demanding people. And there's obnoxious. They're just like, it'd be summertime and we had the air conditioning on in there because it was summer and hot. And she's like, I'm cold. Turn off the air. Those type of people. And it's like, what? It's because your blood's flowing very slowly. Bring a jacket with you. It's like, the whole restaurant's not going to suffer because you're cold. It's like, but I was like, one day, because they would always get drunk, and like one day she went to the bathroom, and she's in there forever. And even her husband's like, I think someone needs to go check on her. And what happened is she would not let anybody into the bathroom. But she can't. She apparently had fallen down on the ground because she had puked everywhere and slipped on it and like broken her ankle. But she would not let anybody into the bathroom because she was so embarrassed by it. And so it was this whole ordeal that was going on. It was like, oh my God. And we had to, you know, of course, call the paramedics and everything. Her husband and she were trying to tell us not to call them. I'm like, no. Because number one, you know, this is a liability thing too. He's like, you could sue us, you know, for this kind of stuff. He's like, no, we're this is all going on the record and everything like that. But I was like, my God, just like what? And it looked like something from The Exorcist had happened in that bathroom. I was like, my God, what did she do in here?
She's probably thinking, man,
you should have turned off the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. It was just like, and I felt so sorry for like our busboy that had to go in and clean all of that. I was like, I gave him like half of my tips that night because I'm like, dude, you deserve extra for what? Because I knew the bosses weren't going to give him any extra. And I'm like, dude, here, you went above and beyond today.
I worked the last 20 years or so in behavioral health. And I worked in a lot of lockdown units and psych hospitals and different things like that. And this is going to come up again later as we get into Terrifier, because of one character in particular. And yeah, we would just randomly have days where so-and-so created an art project in their bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I'm all too used to what you guys
and you had a chartist.
Yes, it's a great term. I'd had that back then. Yeah. Or not experienced it, one of the two.
Yeah.
But but no, yeah, you guys are bringing back some terrible memories for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, actually, I want to talk about one really fast because this is a character that's going to come up later, but I feel like it really fits right here. So I had a client, and I'm not breaking HIPAA. I'm not going to mention any names or even tell you what state I was in at the time because it's not where I live now. Denial. I worked at the state hospital. Yeah, exactly. And we had this client who believed that not only an inanimate object was her baby, but she believed that the turds that she gave birth to were her babies, and that we were horrible murderers for flushing them. And I'm not making fun of this at all. Like, I really want to talk about how serious this character is later. But and she would hide them in her room, like in a Kleenex box, and you wouldn't know where they were. So for like weeks, days, maybe it was days, maybe it felt like weeks. But, you know, you'd be like, we have to search her room again. It's got to be there somewhere, you know. And so that character, when we get into this, really hit a note with me. Like, that's the most tragic part of this fucking film to me.
Yeah.
And again, not making fun of it, not bashing it at all. Oh, like, this is a patient that I think about all the time because I can't imagine the terror that she went through every time that we murdered her children in her mind, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm watching Terrifier, and I'd read spoilers. I knew what was coming, and I completely forgot about that character. And when the shit with her baby hit, I was like, I wasn't crying, but I was like, oh my god, I missed that patient. And I really felt that just kind of played into what we were just talking about right now. Yeah. So I just wanted to hit that real fast. But
I totally understand. Crazy. Yeah.
It's you know, mental health industry is something else. I tell you that. It's just like. Because I've seen a lot of that because my sister's mentally and physically handicapped, and my mom was a special ed teacher as well. And just the stories that I have seen with my sister and her friends, and then the stories my mom had from when she taught are just like, wow. And that was just with the mentally handicapped. I can only imagine what it's like in the institutions and stuff like that. It's just, oh, boy.
And especially like where I was kind of a... like people who had been institutionalized a large majority of their life as well.
Yeah.
That's your entire earth. Like this ward, you know, like that fucks with me. Like I would love to explore that in a story in the future, but I don't know if I can mentally handle it either. Like it's just so, it really fucks with me to think about it.
It's heartbreaking to think because it's like, it's, you know, some people try to make fun of it. I'm like, no, it's not really something. It's because this is real. And these fears that these people have are real fears. This is very real to them. These delusions they have are very real to them.
Yeah. I mean, we accept reality as it's presented to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there's things I do in my life that somebody would be like, that's fucking weird. What's wrong with you? You know, and that's stuff I can control and choose.
Yeah. So, I recently found out that I'm on the spectrum. I'm like, oh, wow. So many of my idiosyncrasies make so much more sense to me now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this is why I'm like this. This is why I freak out when like I because I'm a very structured person. I'm all about time. You know, like I do certain things at certain times of the day and stuff like that. And if I have something on my agenda one day, this is what I'm going to do at this time, blah, 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 blah. And it's something I've always been like this my whole entire life. And my dad would do stuff to me all the time as a kid where he would just abruptly just, okay, we're going to do this instead now. I'm like, no, and I would freak out. And my mom was always telling me, like, Steve, you have to tell David if you're going to change plans because he has this all scheduled out in his head. You have to tell him. You've got to prepare him. You can't just spring a change of plans on him. And now I'm like, oh, this is why I'm like this. Oh, okay. This is good news. It's like I'm glad to know this about myself now, because now I'm like, this is why I react certain ways now. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had the same experience, but I've worked with a lot of people with different levels of disabilities or other abilities or however you want to call it. And I spent maybe three times I've worked at autism schools, and just, I mean, they're called autism, but full spectrum, you know.
Right.
And just, it's one of those things that I really get, because I'm very scheduled and try to be really structured. I'm not on the same level. Like, I don't totally freak out, but I do have the like it's just this terrible, like, what the fuck are you doing? This is what we agreed to do at this time, right. You know? And I find that my friends who have been diagnosed later in life, it helps them so much, because they have an answer. They have a reason. And when I meet people who are like, oh, I don't want to test my child, I'm like, no, fucking test your child, because either it'll be no, and then you can just ignore this and you can figure out a different path, or B, you'll get the answer and you can work with it and you can make their life easier. Why would you not want to test for this?
Exactly.
And I think it's weird how, as a society, we're just conditioned to like be scared of these things, and oh, I don't want my kid diagnosed with this, or I don't want to be diagnosed with this. And I don't really know where I was going with this so much.
It just seems like some people can't handle the idea of imperfection. But that's the thing. No one's perfect.
Definitely.
And everybody's got some kind of flaw. I was just lucky, because growing up, I had behavioral problems. I had a chemical imbalance growing up, where I always called it my Bruce Banner, Incredible Hulk, Jekyll and Hyde type syndrome, where I would just be my calm, mild-mannered, lovable self, and then someone would say something to me or do something to me, and then I would just full on just go into rage mode and just beat the crap out of them. It's something I never instigated. It was just someone would push me, like someone would bully me, and now I would just lose it. And I wouldn't even know I had done it. It was like a berserker rage where I was out of control and I would black out. And then afterward, I would snap back, and I'm like, you know, I'm like feeling remorse and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. And this was like the early 80s, and this is before they had really known anything about this. My mom was, you know, being a former special ed teacher, was more in tune to what was going on due to her studies. And she's like, I believe my son has a chemical imbalance. And we went to different child psychologists and doctors, and they're at this early 80s. They're like, oh, no, he's just got too much sugar in him. Too much sugar. He needs to go on a no sugar diet. So for the longest time, a lot of my childhood, I was on a no sugar diet, where I couldn't even drink milk because of, you know, the sugars that are in milk. I couldn't have bread. It was just, I had to do all the sugar free stuff. And that was the 80s, before sugar free stuff was actually good to eat. It was just this nasty, ugh, like sugar free candy. Well,
I remember it all too well.
Oh, horrible. But then my mom was very persistent about this. She's like, no, I because I was on this sugar-free diet and it wasn't doing anything. She's like, this is not working. This is not working. And we went from, you know, I was tested so much. I had so many CAT scans and all of that. I was always being tested, because my mom was like, I want to figure out what's wrong with my son. And she finally took me to a child psychologist that she's like, I believe my son has a chemical imbalance. And this child psychologist is like, I think you might be right. Let's put him on this medication and see what happens. And they put me on the medication. And I remember, like, I was like the first time in my life, I felt like my insides weren't trying to jump out of me. I before that, I always felt like I just had this little ball of anger inside of me that was just ready to just leap out. And that medication calmed me. And I'm like, oh. And that's when I stopped getting in fights all the time. I was in the office all the time in elementary school. But my teachers understood too. It's like, this is because they would just see me totally change personalities. And they're like, whoa. So they were always trying to work with my mom. That's the thing. My mom was always trying to work with the teachers and everybody around me. She was very concerned about it. And we figured out what was wrong. And then when I hit puberty, everything balanced itself out. I actually had 3 grandma seizures because all that stuff was going on in my brain. Just boom, yikes. And I had those seizures. And because I have a slight speech impediment, I have a little bit of a stutter at times because of those seizures. But the chemical imbalance went away. And it was like, oh, this is great. But that's the thing. It's like I had a parent that recognized that there was something wrong. And she and my father both went out of their way to fix this. They're like, okay, we realize that he's not perfect. What can we do to help him out? And it's sad that there are so many people out there that don't do that for their children.
No, absolutely. And that's one of those things I don't understand. Why would you not want to make life easier on your child? Whether it's diagnosed or not, it's still there.
Yeah.
So you should do the part that gets the help, you know?
Exactly.
Do you channel any of this into art? Like, I mean, art's, I feel like there's a lot of you in art the more I talk to you. And I haven't watched All Hallows Eve and I haven't seen old art or whatever we want to call him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's major differences in how you went about it or anything like that. I'm a complete novice to this and I apologize. Like, how much of this past anger and this past the rapid Bruce Banner change and that kind of stuff goes into your performance with art?
I guess it's probably in there somehow. You know, I've really never thought of it that way, but I'm like, yeah, I could see that because he does have those moments where he kind of snaps. It's like 1 second he's just all playful, also boom, he's just killing you. So yeah, that makes sense.
That's kind of what I was thinking about is he's doing these little dances and these things that made me love art. That's mm-hmm. the parts that I love, like the little wave and the nice little smile and, you know, and then all of a sudden it's just, and now I'm going to poke your fucking eyes out, you know?
Yeah.
And so no, I didn't know if it was like a purposeful thing or if it's just, you know, just acting in general or if it's even in there. It was just
a little bit of both. I can say, I will say that, you know, art does everything with purpose though. It's just like, he does this like the cat lady says, you know, he does this because he finds it amusing. He finds it funny. And that's what I think is really interesting about him. It's like he toys with people before he kills them. He plays with his food, as I like to say.
Well, I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan at all, but I was a big Voyager fan. I'm the only person alive that thinks that Voyager is a great Star Trek. And I own that. I'm fine with that. I don't care. Yeah. But there's an episode where they meet a clown who goes by the name of Fear. And he's kind of the same. He's kind of dancey and making jokes. And in the end, he kind of just doesn't want to be alone. Right. Like it's like his own fear coming through. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there's a direct comparison here, but like I got that same vibe. And Fear is one of my favorite characters that was on Voyager. Hmm. And I just instantly gravitated to that with art, like the playfulness and the. It's kind of like he goes out and he's like, hey, come home and play with me, you know, and that doesn't end well for anybody, but, you know.
Yeah, he's just malicious. That's his thing. I don't think he really has any redeeming qualities to him. I think he's just pure evil. It's just like, yeah, he just loves to kill people. It's fun for him. He's like the anti-clown, where, you know, clowns are supposed to be, they do what they do to entertain others and bring joy to others. He does this to entertain and bring joy to himself instead. He's very selfish. And clowns are typically supposed to be selfless.
Well, and even I know most of this is purposeful, but, you know, when you go with anti-clown, he doesn't have the big wig hair. He's all drained of color instead of being bright and vibrant and, You know, like you just, it's very anti-clown. It's the opposite of Pennywise. It's the opposite of, I don't know, whatever else I would expect, you know?
Well, that's something Damien did on purpose. Because he's like, you know, because he knew that art would always be compared to Pennywise. So it's like, well, you know, I don't want to do something that's like Pennywise. Let's do the opposite of Pennywise, where Pennywise is hair, art is bald. Pennywise is colorful, art is black and white. Pennywise talks and taunts people with talking and jokes and everything like that. Art is completely silent.
I love that he's silent even when he gets attacked.
Yeah.
Like when he gets stabbed, that's probably my favorite moment in the entire film, because I really felt like, again, I'm a novice. This was my first time seeing it. I'm totally expecting to finally hear Art here. And when he didn't scream, it meant so much more to me.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, is this all purposeful or can he not speak? And I don't know if there's an answer to that, but I'm choosing in headcanon that he does this to fuck with you even more, because that's amazing.
Oh, I think it's mime, really cool. Which is even scarier.
But don't call him a mime. He'll kill
you. No.
Because that's something I get that question a lot. It's like, is he a mime? I'm like, no, he's a silent clown. There's a difference. And it's like, you know, Emmett Kelly Jr., that's a great example of a silent clown. That's what, you know, or Harpo Marx was a silent clown.
Yeah.
It's and the difference between the two is, you know, silent clowns use props. Mimes do not. Right. That's why they're called mimes. They pantomime everything.
That'd be a hell of a movie. It's just killing you with invisible shit.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
Now he's like, wrapping the rope around your neck.
You have to believe it's there for you to actually be affected by it. It's just like, oh, God. It's like, just don't believe in the knife. You'll be fine, man.
I'm bleeding out everywhere.
Like, oh, no, I can't blood. Stop it.
Oh, man. All right, Don, do you have any major questions in your notes that you want to start with?
I don't have any major ones. I mean, they're going to come up as we go through, but I was just kind of going through my brain, thinking of all the other clowns themselves. I mean, things like, I mean, famous serial killer clowns, of course, like John Wayne Gacy. Yeah. But then I think
Pagliacci. But see, he wasn't a clown when he killed people, though.
Right. But it was just one of those things where they used the clown thing as an or his clown character or his clown job to make it scarier,
right?
Because he, like you said, he wasn't killing the kids as a clown. He used the clown costume to, I guess, drop people's defenses to not suspect him of being a bad guy, because he's a clown. He's trying to entertain people. He's doing balloon animals for kids. He's squirting them with, yeah. And for me, I was just like, well, you've got that. Oh crap, I wrote a bunch of them down. I think like even the opera pop. Pagliacci had kind of the same issues going on, but I like it, like James pointed out, because I think I texted him this while I was watching it, or I'm sorry, while he was watching it and trying not to spoil things, but again, he doesn't care about spoiling. I didn't think about him getting stabbed, because I was more focused on, I guess, on the tension that had been building. And even there's that one point, I think, after I guess that tussling between he and Tara, I made a joke to James. I said, Art fucking cheated. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, he used a gun. He used a gun. Everything else was quiet. This is the first thing that makes noise. He's cheating.
Needs a silencer.
Yeah. He's like, bastard. Just waiting for like him to turn around with a big knife or a mallet or something.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what everybody was expecting. That's why it worked so well. That's just
did.
Oh yeah, I was like, when we filmed that part, we're just like, oh, we're gonna piss off so many people. It's like, this is gonna get like, we couldn't wait for like when we did the first screen of that. I was like, that was one thing we're talking about. Like, we can't wait to see people react to this moment. And that was one of the coolest moments I ever experienced in a theater. It was the different reactions that happened all at once. You had people that screamed because they got scared, because like, holy shit, they weren't expecting it. You had other people that screamed in anger. They're like, that's bullshit. You know, both because it's like, how dare he use a gun, and also bullshit that's like, holy, like, that, they didn't expect it in that way. And then you had other people just started laughing their asses off. Like, that's brilliant, you know. So it's this whole these different reactions that happen at once. It's like, yes, this is exactly what we wanted. We wanted a mixed bag of reactions to that moment, because it's not, no one expected that, and you've never really seen anything like that happen before in a horror film. It's like you have had slashers that, you know, have had guns in them, but not in that way, where it's like you, people expect him maybe to throw a knife or a squirting flower or something like that, but not him to actually just pull out a gun and cap her.
Like when the sister shows up and he's chasing her and he can't get through the door because, you know, the chain that's on the door doesn't allow him enough space to get through. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a part I expected something, you know, some type of noise, right? I mean, the noise that he uses, the honker, the little horn, that one works because at that point I laughed my ass off because it was so funny.
Yeah.
And you could also imagine from her perspective, it was Vanessa, I think, from her perspective.
Victoria. Yes.
It was terrifying, again, because she's being already seen all the shit that, well, most the results of what has gone taken place, right? Mm-hmm. And here she is getting chased down by this clown, and he sticks his arm through the door and honks a horn at her. And for me, I was like, I would have loved to have seen his face, but I think his face would have killed it for me. It's just that image of his hand going through the door or the crack in the door and honking the horn and her whole thing of like, what the fuck is going on here? And for all the killer clowns from outer space fans that are out there, this is a better killer clown movie. And I mean, it's got its fan base. It's got its little cult following. I don't get it because for me, nothing in the movie is funny. I mean, it's funny for a lot of the fans of it, but this one, like, there were some kills, like even the kill of Dawn, where she gets split in half. I'm like, this is going to be gruesome, but it's going to be funny.
Yeah.
And to the level where you can't even be disgusted by the amount of blood and the entrails coming out. And even the stuff that visually it shouldn't work, like when he starts sawing through her head halfway through the body. I'm just like, all right, you can tell it's fake, but it's funny. I should have a psyche eval after watching this movie and my reactions to it, because I shouldn't laugh at, you know, how her butt was jiggling when he's doing the hacksaw. But it's done for that purpose, where you're just seeing like hit just the struggle that he has, or maybe it's just he's faking the struggle that he's having with the hacksaw. But just the way he slices her in half is just like that works.
Yeah.
Because the friend is having to watch her friend, Tara's having to watch Dawn get cut in half in front of her.
Yeah.
Having to listen to her friend screaming, and this motherfucker has a big smile on his face while he's doing it, like, haha, see what I can do?
Mm-hmm. That's such a great scene in that way, because that's such a messed up thing to do. Because, like, not only is he killing Dawn, her friend is having to watch that happen right before her eyes. He's doing this to try to mentally break her down. I'm like, that's messed up. It kind of reminds me of the whole thing with, you know, Killing Joke, where, you know, Joker's got Jim Gordon, you know, tied up and everything. He takes him on that, like, little amusement park ride and showing him all these photos of his daughter that, you know, he had done all the horrible things he had done to Barbara. I'm like, you know, that's what he's trying to do, is trying to mentally break this person down.
Nah, I think that's a great comparison. Mm-hmm. So two things on this scene. Number one, I love that he doesn't finish it.
Yeah.
The fact that he leaves this little tiny bit where the head's still connected. There's something about that that's so much more disturbing than if he made it through and the body was just swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a sick thing to do. Because
it really pisses, like, off the OCD people. It's like, no, you're not done.
But it's also just like, it keeps it so that you can tell it's a body immediately as well.
Right.
So that when the others come in, like, I don't know that you'd same reaction with the half. You'd be like, what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? Right. And this way, and I don't know that you'd know better than me. I don't know that they put this much work into thinking this, but it works really fucking well. And then my second thing with this is one of the rules with writing comedy or horror is that the comedy, you go for the joke, but the twist is when you take the expected joke and then you go an extra level with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the same when I write horror. I think what's expected and then how do I twist that and add to it? And that's what this scene does, because he's sitting there with the saw against the other friend's throat forever and just like toying with her. And she thinks the worst thing that can happen right now is that this guy's going to hurt me or kill me. That's mm-hmm. the worst that can happen. And right. then he's like, ha ha, next level bullshit over here. You know, like that's not even on her radar. And right. then that fear is just exponentially grown. And Jesus, this is a beautiful scene.
Well, not only that the it tricks you as an audience member as well, because we're assuming, I mean, the general audience is assuming that Art has killed Dawn in the car, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why would he drag her body all the way into the, you know, the extra work that has gone into this?
Yeah.
I'm going to abduct you, drag you into this building, into the basement, the bowels of this building, strip you naked, hang you upside down, and leave you here until I go get your friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it threw me off as a viewer, because they did, or at least you guys did, this nice little deflection to where Dawn is attacked in the car. We're assuming that she's been attacked in the car. We don't see the kill. We don't need to see the kill, because we didn't see the pizza shop owner get killed. We just saw his head.
Right.
You know, we saw mm-hmm. the end result of it. So you're already thinking like, oh, well, fuck it. We're not going to see everybody die. Somebody gets caught by him. Like, oh, fuck it. They're dead. We're going to focus on Tara now. She's got to run through this building and try and hide from him, get away. And as James pointed out, when he rips that, you know, that curtain down, which is a great touch, when he, you know, yes. reveals what's behind the curtain, you as an audience member are like, oh, fuck. And yeah. it, because I'm just waiting for her throat to get slashed, Tara's throat to get slashed by the hacksaw, but by ramping it up to where now he pulls back that curtain and it's like, oh yeah, nah, I'm gonna screw you and the viewers right now, because I'm gonna, you know, turn this woman into two.
She's, I like to call it up at the crack of dawn.
That's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my. We'll just end the episode there. No, I'm just kidding. Now, Don literally wrote me and he was like, when the blonde girl dies, this will become your new favorite kill scene or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And yeah, yeah. I don't know if this is my favorite overall, but it's definitely skyrocketed up my fucking charts. So holy shit.
It's a fun scene. I really enjoyed it, but you know, that's oddly enough is not my favorite kill in the movie though. It's just like I enjoy the decapitation of the exterminator.
Okay.
Nice. I had a lot of fun with it. Plus it's an Easter egg too, because Mike Levy, who plays him, he is also the his film company, Fuzz and the Lens Film. They are the guys that started the whole scary clown craze back in like 2014, I think, where it was the guy dressed up as a clown standing out in Staten Island.
Really?
He was the Staten Island clown.
Amazing.
So yeah, he was doing it before Wrinkles the Clown was doing that stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it was like Mike.
I wrote down, I was like, clowns are running around the country.
Yeah, and it was they were the ones that really started that. In other words, it's just arriving, you know, on people's porches or just standing there in public and with that crazy costume on. They're like, what right. the heck? It was just creeping people out. That was them. And so I think that's a, you know, I love that little Easter egg there that I'm killing the Staten Island clown in a way. Plus, it's an awesome decapitation.
Oh, yeah.
It was so much fun to do. And that was actually a kill that we put in after we had originally finished filming the movie. One of our producers out in Australia was like, I want one more kill in this movie. And so that's what we added in. And it was just fun to do. It was just like, especially just pulling the head back like a Pez dispenser and then
popping it off and kicking it. It's like, that was fun. It was just, it was a lot of fun to do, and it looks really good. It's like the Damien outdid himself on like the prosthetics for that scene.
Yeah, no, that scene looks great.
Yeah.
I was impressed with the whole film, to be honest with you. Like, I didn't know what to expect quality-wise, and I was blown away throughout the whole thing. I was just like, especially there's a scene where Tara's crawling under the car, and the way everything's lit with the blues and the reds and all that shit, like, that scene just looks so fucking beautiful.
Well, that's just, it tells you, it's like, we just had we had a very small crew because we had a very small budget. We made this film for about $50,000.
Wow.
That's it. I laughed my ass off for about an hour, it seemed like, when I found out how much we made that movie on. Because in my head, I thought we had made it for at least $500,000. And I'm like, yes. What? Only we only made it for a tenth of that? Are you kidding me?
Would the crew like to run for Congress? Because I feel like they could do a lot with our budget.
Oh, my God. That's the thing. It's like, it's all the locations we found were as is. So like that bathroom was as nasty as it was. It's like that was not set dressings at all. This is just, we just found great locations. They were disgusting locations. Oh my God, they're miserable to work in, but they work so well on film. And then we had a great crew that just knew how to do everything, you know, the lighting and everything. Then Damien did all the practical effects himself. He's a one-man army when it comes to all that. And so that saved a lot of money that he was doing, that he didn't have to hire outside people. I mean, it made it harder for him because he had to do it all himself. But he knows what he's doing. And I think in part two, he outdoes himself even more. I'm like, I know right now, as I'm speaking, he's doing all these prosthetics for this big, huge scene that we're filming next week. And it's just – He goes above and beyond. I think he's outdone himself in part two with some of the prosthetics that he made, like one of the scenes we filmed. I can't say what it is yet, but
yeah,
the prosthetic he made, I couldn't tell the difference between the prosthetic and the actor.
Wow.
I just could not tell, because he had even put a breathing apparatus in, so it looked like it was breathing.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
I'm like, are you kidding me? It is like all the facial hair and everything. He does all this himself, where he has to put all these individual pieces of hair, and he puts all the skid blemishes on everything, so it looks just like the actor. And it's just like, this is, and he does it himself. I'm like, it's like, you're insanely talented. I mean, he wrote it, he directed it, he does all the prosthetics, he does all the editing. He's a one man army. It's like, you don't see that kind of talent very often.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's just like that's why I'm glad that these films are picking up the recognition they're getting, because I'm like, Damien needs to be someone big in Hollywood. He deserves it, because he does amazing work. He's so incredibly talented.
One of the things I always wonder. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things we've discovered, you know, doing the show and speaking with people, especially those that are in indie films and small budget films, is the quality is so much better than a lot of the big budget. I mean, what you expect, better quality in the big budget films, but I mean quality as far as the story and then, you know, the bang for your buck, because there's a lot more online, a lot more on the line when we're looking at some of these indie films or some of these lower budget films. To get recognized,
right,
or just to get recognized by the distributors or the streaming services or just by audiences themselves, because there are a lot of times that I would say a general audience isn't going to see a horror film unless it's in the movie theaters, right. But by having this on, because I watched it on Amazon Prime and I know it was also on Shudder, I think, but by having that, at least a combination of indie films with the quality that they have, and then also these streaming services. I mean, you're getting a lot better films to the public that they otherwise wouldn't even know about.
Right.
Because of the age we live in now, especially, and also you throw in quarantine into it as well.
Oh, yeah. That's you know, which has been interesting about this with all the streaming programs and everything right now. It's just like, it's been great for indie films. Like films that would never see a national release in theaters. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we wanted to put Terrifier in theaters nationwide, but we had distribution that wanted to put us in, but they wanted to make massive cuts to the film because of the gore. And Damien was like, absolutely not. No, you're not going to sacrifice what is going to make this film stand out from the rest.
Right.
I'm not going to sacrifice that just to be in theaters nationwide. And I'm glad he did, because Damien is a true horror fan. He's literally named after Damien from The Omen. That's cool. He's been watching horror films since I think he's like 3 years old. So he loves them. He's made the type of film he wants to see. He makes the film for the fans, not for what the studio system wants. He makes it for what the fans want to see, because he knows what the fans want to see, because he's making the film he wants to see. And that's what I love about it. It's like, yeah, we take these risks and we go through with them. It's like some of the kills that we have in part two, I think are going to blow part one out of the water, because like, wow, we took that as a challenge to try to surpass what we did with the hacksaw scene. It's like, what can we do? And we're swinging for the fences in part two, and that's what's great about all these streaming platforms. It's given us like films like ours a chance to be seen to a wider audience, than instead of just being like, you know, some random thing you see back in the day, you'd be able to find it in some bargain bin or something like that, in the back of your mom and pop, you know, movie gallery or something like that. It's just, it's the streaming platforms have given us a wider audience and a bigger platform to show these type of films. Because they're like, yeah, go ahead, show the gore. We're fine with that.
And the thing that I see happening is we're getting a wider variety of what horror is as well.
Yes.
Three of my favorite films this year, I don't feel have that much to do with each other. And I don't feel like any of them would have gotten that huge release, right? So we have 1BR, which is just a fantastic film. And then Host... I don't know if you've seen Host, but Host just blew me the fuck away.
Okay.
And then Scare Me. And Scare Me is nothing like the others. You know, it's two writers in a cabin, like, just using their imaginations the whole time, basically.
Cool. I haven't seen any of these. I need to see them.
Oh, man. You should definitely. Host is fantastic because it was made in quarantine, and they went from initial concept to release on Shudder in 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's great. All the practical effects are fantastic. But I don't feel like something like Scare Me, where it's just basically two people talking for the whole movie, I don't think that gets a horror release, like a real big horror release, you know? And
right.
Thanks to something like Shudder, like, this film blew the fuck up. It was all over my news feeds and my Twitter and everything else, And Josh Rubin, who made it, is actually going to be on our show soon.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I mean, I'm so blown away by how these streaming services have opened this for us, but also how it's kind of made horror a little more, I hate saying mainstream, because I don't feel like horror will ever actually be mainstream. But, you know, like something like Bird Box. Bird Box got like, I don't know, I'm going to make up numbers, but like 50 million hits, you know, like. You don't get that if it just had a theater release and it was the new horror movie. Nah. And you don't get like a lot of these other things that we're getting to see, like Stranger Things taking over things, or, you know, just it's really allowed people to accept that. Yes, I do like horror. I didn't know I liked horror. That's cool. You know,
there's something for everybody, too, because different things scare different people. So it's horror is so subjective in that way, because, you know, I know there are some people that don't like Terrifier. It's not their cup of tea. So I'm like, that's fine. There have been other horror films that have come out that have been mainstream that everybody was going crazy about, and I just didn't care for because they didn't affect me in that way. I found them boring. But that's the thing. It's subjective, just like comedy is subjective.
And I mean, I have a couple Stephen King movies I don't like, so I get like destroyed when I tell people this, you know. And But that's what I feel like streaming has done, is it's allowed us all to embrace the things that we like, and we don't have to go out of our way to get it, which is really nice, because you can try things out no matter what the genre is. You could watch whatever the new Hallmark movie is. I don't fucking know. It's Christmas time. There's 200
of them. The same movie.
Oh, it's the one with the white guy and the white girl, and then there's like
they're wearing and then they go red to Christmas.
I remember that.
And they fall in love.
Yeah, and they wear matching sweaters or something.
Yeah.
But no, I feel like it's really cool that you can try things now. You can watch 15 minutes and go, that's not what I wanted it to be. And you can just go about your life. It's not like paying to go to the theater and you're like, if I walk out, I'm going to be pissed off. And if I stay, I'm going to be pissed off. And you know.
And then you'll see some things that, like, if they were in the theater, you probably wouldn't have seen, because like, this sounds stupid. But then you watch it and you're like, oh, my God, that was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, you're like, yeah, I don't have to pay $15 to go see this. So, yeah, I'll give it a shot. That's how it was when I saw The Babysitter. I was like, oh, okay, this seems like it's going to be cool. And I was sitting here just cracking up, and I love that movie. I was like, this is such a fun movie. Oh, my God, I love this.
Max is my boy crush.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Understandable.
Yeah, we did a whole episode about it. I don't think I shut up about Max the whole time.
Oh, yeah. So. I can understand.
So I want to talk about this pizza scene really fast, the pizza parlor scene.
Well, that's my favorite scene in the movie.
I think it's everybody's. Like, everyone I talk to who has seen Terrifier brings up this scene. And that's actually something I want to point out, because this scene is in the trailer.
Right.
And I don't know a lot of movies where people go, oh, man, the best scene was in the trailer, and that's a good thing. You know? So I find it amazing that this scene that everyone just loves is in the trailer. That's crazy to me. But this scene is just phenomenal all around, whether it's I've been the drunk person trying to eat pizza so that I can eventually go home, whether it's I've been the creepy guy staring at the two. Wait, no, that's not right.
What do you mean, did?
Thanks. No, but it's your performance. Your performance here is just fucking great. Like, I can't say enough nice things about this. It's the staring. It's the not moving. Mm-hmm. It's the entire aura. And I know I'm just kind of kissing your ass here, but I really mean it. Like, this made art for me. Like, art is now immediately a Jason, a Freddy level to me, because whether I get 100 more sequels or not, like, this moment, like, dug into my core, and I fucking adore this. So I want to get Don's take on this scene, and then I want to come back to you, because you just said it was your favorite, and I want you to tell me your view on it. All right.
Sure. All right.
Don, tell
Here's
me about
my take on this. Well, I definitely have to agree with respect to those days in college where you happen to go to Waffle House or the local pizza bistro or bar, or whatever, you know, somewhere to sober up and then make your way home. Right.
God, I miss Waffle House.
It was so great at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so good.
But Sheep no, just, good. just the idea as I was watching, I was just wondering, like, how many times did he break character? I want to know if he broke, like, just at one moment, somebody had to fucking laugh or do something and just completely get taken out of that scene. But I liked how real this was, at least for Tara. Mm-hmm. You know, they've already run into this guy that they don't want to drive drunk home, you know, at least let Don drive, and don't want to risk any issues, right? So they're trying to do the right thing, and the right thing is what ultimately leads to their demise, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point.
So they go, they're like, we're going to sober up, we'll have some pizza, which I read, like, the backstory about it was supposed to be a burger place, but ended up being a pizza place because they're vegetarians.
Yep.
But I like how they go there, and you see these two guys working in the, you know, the owner of the pizza place and the cook, and it's just kind of a normal night for them despite it being Halloween. And these two women come in, and then the clown comes in, and they're not even initially kind of turned off by it. It's kind of like, oh, it's just some weirdo in a clown costume. And it's not like, hey, fucker, what are you doing dressed up like that with a big bag? It's kind of like, all right, I'll get to you in a second. Let me get their pizza. I'll come to you. And it's just the placement of Art in that costume and the look that he has that is unsettling for no one except for Tara.
Yeah.
And everyone else is kind of like, oh, fuck, he's just, you know, just guy in a costume. He's just this. He's just, to the point where even Dawn herself goes over and is like, oh, my friend wants your number. She thinks you're hot. And then goes over and takes a selfie with him. And I just love the whole thing. She's like, you already got 7 likes. Just how fucking clueless she is about this whole situation.
Bless her heart.
Because we've seen those. I mean, with all the social media that's out there, with Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, mm-hmm. all those things where somebody gets caught in the moment like, oh, this would make a cool picture. Let me see. And then you get caught up in that idea of, got caught up in that moment of, oh, I want to see if anybody likes this. And it immediately turns into, oh, shit, you already got 7 likes. And I could imagine her checking that, if she had survived, checking her phone even more. And I think that's even what she was doing in the car, to see how many more likes she probably got from that photo or how good she looked that whole night, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just loving that whole thing where everybody else is out of this except for Tara. And she doesn't want to take her eyes off of him, which is a great device in this film to convey the anxiety and tension, mm-hmm. because Art isn't necessarily breaking eye contact. And that's what even makes it even to an extent more disturbing, because it's as if they're the only ones that connect in that room. He's looking at her. She's looking at him. Yeah. And it's just one of those things like, I'm not going to let you out of my sight. Something's going on. But of course, then Art, you know, needs to go to the bathroom.
Well, don't forget, he proposes first.
Oh, well, yes.
As you do.
Hey, really fast. Can I just say, I love that Dawn doesn't have like 127 likes.
Yeah.
It's like a low number and she's excited about it. Like, that's what made me laugh.
You got 8 likes already. That's amazing.
As somebody who's blowing gets, like, up, likes, I really identify with this.
Bible.
She forgot the hashtag. That's what it was.
Well, that's what's also so messed up, too, is like realizing I just thought of that right now. I was like, my God, that was like the last picture she posted. And like, she's posting a picture with the guy that just shortly after violently kills her.
Right. And then that's takes a mess. Selfie and maybe uploaded it as well.
Yeah. And maybe that's probably also fun. Being used in newspaper articles and everything, too. It's like, oh, yeah, here she is with her killer right before all this. It's like, God, that's messed up. That is
and
really messed up.
We've seen a few of those in social media where somebody happened to capture their killer, like their rapist. Like, they happened to capture them in, you know, some selfies that they were taking with their friends at the bar or the club or something.
It's messed up.
It just makes it even more real, because James and I have talked about this on other shows, you know, with respect to women and being safe. Mm-hmm. Dawn, you don't get that sense of she's worried about her safety.
Right.
Tara is worried about her safety and Dawn's safety. So she's worried about both of them with herself. So it's not an issue of, oh, fuck it, I've got to get home. It's oh, my God. You know, and then it really comes to a head when she sees Dawn cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's an issue of like, oh, I've just got to worry about me. Yeah. And I know this shit has gotten real.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just some creepy guy following us around. This guy's a fucking maniac.
Right. Right. Oh, that's, you know, this is what I love about the scene, because it sets up all of that. And it's just Damien wrote it. So because it's such a relatable scene, too. And that's, you know, I pulled from like experiences I've witnessed here in New York City, just riding the subway, where I've had several female roommates in the past, and the things I have seen guys do to them on the subway, where you'll just see a guy sitting across from and just staring at them and leering at them. in that way. And that's what I was pulling from. It's like, I'm just thinking that. It was just like, I'm just going to be like these guys on the subway, just staring at her in that way, just trying to creep her out. And just like, it's so unsettling, because this is something women do have happen to them. And that's what I think is so great, that Damien writes these type of scenes where, like, yeah, this is relatable. It's not just something like, okay, we're going on a camping trip and, oh, let's go have sex in the woods and, knife in the back.
Well, even the pizza parlor owner guy, you know, he comes over and he's like, if you're not going to buy something, you need to get the fuck out of here, basically. But he doesn't enforce it, right?
Right.
He doesn't actually make him leave. And I thought that in and of itself was pretty relatable, because you see a lot of, I don't want to say he was the macho guy, but you see a lot of people that lay down rules and don't follow through. Mm-hmm. And you know, I bet he wishes that he had a little bit more, but yeah.
Should have thrown him out earlier, but still, he would still have died.
Definitely.
It took him, you know, doing horrible things to that bathroom for him to throw him out. It's just like, yep.
Well, then he makes the cook clean it up, which is even funnier. And I love the fact, the dialogue in this, and I wrote down, you know, forgotten people, random violence, you know, and there was even some issues of class and whatever. The way that Steve, I think, I can't remember his name, where he goes in and he's like, oh, I better get time and a half for the, you know, he's like sitting there like, I'm cleaning this up. You better pay me some more money for doing this.
Yep.
You know, why are you making the guy who, he's like, oh, this is such a smart idea. Make the guy who cooks the food clean all this shit up.
Yeah.
And that's one, that's either in a conversation that you're having one-on-one with somebody you're very comfortable with, right? Whether they happen to be brothers, this is his uncle's place, or this is just somebody he's known for a while and he works for him. Or he's sitting there back saying this out loud to himself because he knows, you know, the owner is clean up somewhere else, or he's locking up or whatever. He's like, oh, he's going to overhear me and, you know, maybe he'll do something about this, or he's going to have to put up with me pissing and moaning about this right now because, you know, because he has no choice. I'm cleaning this shit up. You're going to have to hear my mouth.
Yep.
You know what the saddest part of this is to me? He wants time and a half. How much could this guy possibly make an hour?
Yeah.
So, like, let's say it took you 2 hours to clean it. What are you making, like, an extra $6? Like, I mean, I'm exaggerating slightly, but
I'm thinking, you know, this is especially before they did the minimum pay raise here in New York, where it went up to like 15 for that kind of stuff. And he was probably making about $7 an hour.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's like, okay, I better be making $10 now for the.
$3 extra, I'll clean up shit. Yeah. Like, that's sad. That's extremely sad.
So, yeah.
I've been there, but it sucks.
I would have loved for the health inspector to walk at that moment.
Oh my god. Oh god, that's everybody's worst nightmare. Because that's always when the health inspector would show up at your job. Oh my god, I wish I had thought of that. That would have been a great thing to add in there. The health inspector shows up right when Art's walking out and there's dead bodies everywhere.
Somebody. Oh, and he only gives him a B grade.
Yeah.
Art holds the door for him, like, tips his hat and walks off.
Well, there was a bit that I wanted to add in there, and we just didn't have time to add it, where they had the comment card and everything, and I want him to fill out a comment card on his way out. Oh, my God. But, yeah. That's the sad thing. It's like we think of extra shtick and we just time constraints, we're not able to add it in here or there. That's happened several times in part two, where like we had ideas for, you know, things we wanted to do with the scene. It's like we just didn't have time to put it in there. And we're like, oh, well, we'll maybe be able to put it in a future film. But it's like, dang, that would have been funny little thing to put in here.
Man, that sucks.
Yeah,
I was even telling James yesterday. I said I wanted Art to just bite a pizza piece of pizza. Like he was just taking a slice with him as he walked out.
Yeah,
you know. But I mean, it was a great way to set up, you know, all the other stuff that was following. And I know James wanted to come back to the cat lady, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the cat lady.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to talk over you in case you wanted to get to that, or to make sure we didn't miss that one.
She doesn't get talked about nearly as much as I think she should.
Really?
Yeah.
That's because
I love that character. I love that character. I think there's a lot to that character.
Is she my favorite?
I want to know so much more about her. What's your favorite quote?
Punctuality is the thief of time.
Yes.
Because it's so out of not. I shouldn't even say it's out of place, right? Because this is the note that I had about her was forgotten people. Mm-hmm. And you see them in any city. I mean, whether it happens to be a major metropolitan area or a small town, you have these forgotten people that you see, you know, they're there, but you don't consider them. Right. You don't consider their lives, their struggles, anything like that. But when she runs into Tara, she makes that comment about punctuality is the thief of time. And you're just thinking about, like, you know, before you have a full chance to really get into the depth of this person and who she is and her struggles, right? You're kind of questioning, like, that's a weird thing to say to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very insightful thing to say to somebody because, you know, if punctuality is something that you focus on, you spend so much time focusing on getting somewhere on time or getting somewhere early that you limit the time that you have with so many other aspects of your life.
Right.
And yeah, again, I just thought it was so insightful as far as the line. And I, you know, with her being somebody I've labeled as a forgotten person, that's a great line as the film goes on, because it makes you think about, you know, all the people that are art or getting killed by art, like all the time that they have missed out on, like even the sister who makes the comment about, oh, you know, I'm sorry, you know that she's studying for a test that she has the next day, right? And the fact that she has to come out and help her sister or get to her sister in time is taken away from time that she should be studying. Or, you know, any number of things that's going on. You know, the fact that they couldn't leave because Dawn and Tara had been drinking and they wanted to make sure they had enough time to get their bearings so they could drive back. All these things that they have to do in order to get to where they need to be or do what they need to be, do what they need to do is taking away from other things. And eventually for them, it takes their lives away.
Yeah.
So, the thing I want to talk about with her is her portrayal in this movie, because I am used to horror just absolutely shitting on people who are different.
Right. Mm.
And we've even done panels on this, how horror represents disabilities and other conditions. And she is portrayed so well. Mm-hmm. And the real kicker for me is the scene where she sits down with Art. And she kind of becomes somebody else almost. She has this moment where she's like, do you have mercy in you? And she's really analyzing, like, who hurt you? Like, how did this happen? And she's the one who, number one, takes time to try to understand. I'm not encouraging you to take time to understand a serial killer trying to kill you, but she is the only person who does this, right? And she really shows that she's able to analyze the world around her, like in a different way, but she's doing it right. And horror, normally she would just become a fucking joke character.
Right.
And the depth that Damien gave her here, and the actress, I do not know her name, but
Puya Masoni. Okay. Yes.
Like this character ripped my fucking heart out when she says, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't know the exact quote, but when she says, please don't hurt her, she's all I have in this world.
Yeah.
Like, holy fuck.
I tell you what, like, when I was doing the scene with Puya, it was just like, she was amazing in this. Like, she was literally crying, just like, and it almost, I started to feel feelings, and I'm like, I can't have feelings right now. I can't, tamp it down. It was just like her, I was like, wow, because like when I read the script with that scene, I was like,
I did not expect that amount of motion that she had put into just that simple moment. I was like, wow, she's really gone some interesting places with this character here. And it's like, for something that could be so easily thrown away.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, this is fantastic. I think there, she brought a tremendous amount of depth to that character. Because I that's what I think is, she's a very interesting character, because I don't believe that she's a character that's always been that way. I think something made her that way. Mm-hmm. Something happened in her life. It was like, I think maybe something happened to her child or something like that. You know, I something. I
definitely feel that, yeah.
That set her off on this path. And that, you know, and that's, you know, it's like, this is like a character I would love to, I hate that we had basically killed her off, because I'm like, God, this is an interesting character to explore more with in the future. But who knows, you know?
The nice thing is you can always make a prequel.
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, who knows? Maybe there is a connection between her and Art in the past. And that's why she kind of keyed into, like, you know, as soon as she sees him, she's like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, this guy is going to kill everybody here, you know?
So the other thing I wanted to point out from my many years working in behavioral health is a lot of times people with different diagnoses are much better at seeing that something's wrong mm-hmm. or that something's slightly different, and really honing in on the feelings of other people like them.
Right.
And I find it interesting that she's the one who kind of, not that she gets a lot of time to bond with Art or anything, but like, she's the one who makes that attempt. And that was so real to me, having worked in psych hospitals and stuff, because so often, I mean, just to be honest, like, there's so many staff that have been there for 25 years and they're burned out and they don't pay attention anymore.
Right.
And you have clients or patients who literally are like, I don't think Beth is feeling very good because she did this differently. And it's so odd to me that they care so much more about each other. But at the same time, like I said, that's the world you have. So that's your society, right?
Yeah. They're empaths.
Yeah. And so I just thought this was such a cool representation of this, because going in, reading the spoilers, I was pretty concerned about this character and how she was going to be portrayed. And this just fucking blew me away. And that's why I wanted to talk about her.
She easily could have been one of those over the top, almost comedic type of crazy characters that you typically see. But like, Puya made her very grounded and real, which I thought was just brilliant. I was like, wow, this, because that's not even how I pictured her originally in my head. I was like, wow, she really went to some interesting places with her. And I was like, God, this is great. And plus, yeah, I just think Puya is just a fantastic actress as well. And it was so funny, because we were trying our, because she's so beautiful too. And so it was like, we had to do so many, we're trying to make her less glamorous. It's like, you're like the most glamorous homeless woman we've ever seen. It was like we were trying to do everything to her hair, and it'll just go back to being just this. I'm like, Jesus, Puya, this is not fair. And I think it's, you know, she would be fine with me saying this, because she's very open about herself in this way, but she's also a transgender actress as well.
Oh, that's cool.
A lot of people did not know. I didn't even know for several days on set. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So it's like, we're breaking more, you know, barriers than people realize.
We've talked about representation a number of times, and it's glad, I'm glad to see more representation in various aspects with respect to gender identity, sexual orientation, because typically when we look at it, we're talking about, we're really just talking about race and gender in a lot of cases. And we tend to forget that diversity and inclusion goes beyond race, gender, religion. You also have categories that people have not been paying attention to for so many years. And the fact that transgender people have been around for a long time.
Since time immemorial, basically.
Yeah. They didn't.
The Native Americans, that was part of their accepted culture.
Exactly.
I was just going to say that. Thank you.
Yes. What was it? The Ones of Two Spirits, I think, was the name.
Yes.
And the thing is that the better educated we get on topics like this, on subject like this, you know, so many people are going to have to realize and face the reality that these people exist. They've always existed. And you know what? You need to stop being uncomfortable with their existence.
Exactly.
I felt like I was going to go on a rant again.
No. But see, I love that we're talking, because this is actually I've seen some of the criticism of the film, and people got upset about the Buffalo Bills scene because they thought we were trying to be transphobic. With me wearing the boobs in it. We were just trying. That was the thing. It's like, no, what he's doing, he's not trying to be transphobic. What he's doing is trying to mess with his victim.
Exactly. You
know? He's trying to psychologically fuck with Victoria. Right, originally making her think that was her sister there, and then it's, oh, surprise, it's actually me, and I'm wearing this woman's body parts and everything like that. It's just that we were not, that was not something we were trying, that wasn't even on our mind that we were trying to be transphobic. And the thing is, if anybody was going to be upset about that scene in that kind of way, it would have been Pooya, and she would have been letting us know about that from the get-go. And definitely. When I saw this kind of criticism come out, I even contacted her. I was like, Pooya, what do you think of this? And she's like, that's bullshit. She's like, it's like, that's not what you guys were trying to do. And I totally, and I was like, no, those people can go suck an egg.
I don't understand how they come to that conclusion, because that's in the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the continuity there, right? It's not, it's not as though Art is laying there with a wig on, mm-hmm. and, you know, and it's kind of like, peekaboo, it's really me. You know, Victoria gets that sense that, oh, this is my sister's body.
Yeah.
You know, because Art isn't anywhere around, and then discovers, oh my gosh, Art, you know, pulled a fast one on me. I need to run and hide. Art mm-hmm. isn't going to change right back into his clown costume. Like, I'm going, you know, as Art, I'm going to continue fucking with you this way.
Yes. That's and how depraved you know. He is.
Yeah.
And that's what people forget. He's the bad guy. He's evil.
Dancing the whole time. This is not out of character.
Exactly. It's like, God, because, you know, other people are like, oh, he's misogynistic. And I'm like, no, he actually killed more men than women in this film. Mm-hmm. It is like, no, he's not any of that. He's an equal opportunity killer. He hates everybody equally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there is no rhyme or reason in one of my other notes was like mm-hmm. the randomness of violence. Because mm-hmm. there's no reason. That's where
I was just going to go. Perfect.
Yeah. No. There's no reason why he's doing it, right? No. So it's not like even the scene where Cat Lady or Pooya's character is pleading for Emily's life, right? The doll. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get the understanding that, well, he kills both of them. For him, it's like Art himself, if he's working with you know, I guess just as a methodical killer, mm-hmm. right? He's not going to think – he's going to use the doll to fuck with Pooya's character, right?
Yeah.
But it seems as though he genuinely killed the doll because he understands what that means to her. So it's not an issue of, oh, I'm going to take the doll and hide it from you and then I'm going to kill you. It's like he like made the effort to kill the doll mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. extinguish its life as if it were a real baby. And then did the same thing to
the death that fucked me up. I don't understand.
Well, the funny thing is, when we did the Buffalo Bill scene, we did a different take with it, which we, of course, didn't use, where I come out with the doll. And I have a doll nursing on my boobs, and then I'm using the doll to tell me where she's hiding. Like the doll's, I'm doing a lot of puppetry with the doll where she's like pointing out where Victoria's hiding in the closet, and she's whispering in my ear and telling me what to do. So I'm being bossed around by the doll.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We just didn't use it. Damon, he was like, I don't know which version to use. So he's like, okay, we'll do the one where you're just making fun of her with the, like, the trying to be more feminine and everything. Like, oh my
release
God.
This as a deleted scene. I want to see this.
Yeah, I wish you would release it, because I would love to see the whole entire scene too.
I was waiting for Art to take a selfie, like with the hair flip and the goofiness that he was doing. I was waiting for him to like just hold a, you know, pantomime a phone in front of his mm-hmm. face and like. Psh.
But he does that later on, so he has right. the body. So yeah, you don't want to repeat the same joke.
True.
Yeah. Plus, it works better with her body anyway, since you know it's.
Oh
yeah.
Man, that's yeah. great.
Yeah, Damien did a good job writing that little bit. And it's like I added the little boop on the nose though, because that's something Catherine did in the moment.
Oh
in
my God.
The restaurant, and I'm like, I want to bring that joke full circle and have him boop her nose when she's dead.
So when I was watching it, I was live texting Don my thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And everything was totally normal. And all of a sudden I just wrote, oh my God, she booped Art's nose.
Yep. It was just something Catherine did. And it was so funny. I was like, and when she did that, I'm like, I'm going to have to bring this back. I have to do this. So I was like, I was like, thank you for doing that. I'm like, I'm going to be able to use that later on.
So good.
And those are the moments I love on set, where it's like something that's not in the script. It's something one of the actors does. I'm like, oh, I can use this. I can use this for later on. Or, you know, it gives me ideas for, you know, funny things. And we had a lot of moments like that with part two, where Damien wrote some, because that's how I like to work. I like to just play around in the moment and see what we come up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wrote some scenes this time, because, you know, when he wrote Terrifier, we didn't know each other at the time. But for part two, we kind of collaborated with ideas, and he wrote some scenes where he's like, he gives a bare bones, like, okay, Art's in this situation, and Art plays. That's basically all he writes, because he's like, yeah, once we get there on location, I want you just to look around what we have, you know, set wise and prop wise, and then come up with something. I'm like, great, sounds like fun. So it's like there are at least two scenes I can really think of in part two where I really got to just play around with my surroundings in the moment and be like, okay, let's come up with some fun shtick here.
Well, and that's awesome, because I feel like improv would really help Art. I mean, I don't know, you'd know better than me, but it just feels like that whole aura I was talking about, that would enhance that, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, I think that's why Damien and I work so well together, because he's the horror guy. He knows what's really good at scaring people and freaking people out. I'm more the comedy guy. I'm like, okay, I can think of some funny things, and then we just kind of put our heads together, and how can we mix these two and be effective? And we do different takes on scenes, where we'll do more of a serious, scary take, and then we'll also do – he was like, okay, David, play now. And so he's got options to work with. And that's what's really cool. So it's like, okay. And when I see what he comes up with, I'm like, okay, yeah. And I like the funny stuff I did, but I see why you went with more serious option, because this is more freaky in the moment. So yeah, but like, hey, we had options there. That's the great thing. It's always good to have those options.
That's fantastic. I love the idea that you get to just play with stuff. That's so much. I'm so interested in this already.
It makes it more fun. It's like I'm looking forward to the kill I'm filming next week, because I don't know exactly what I'm going to be doing until I get there. And it's going to be one of those things in the moment, like, okay, let's think of some funny things that we can do, some messed up things and whatever we come up with, because we want to go crazy with this kill. So it's like, yeah.
Don, do you have any notes left?
No. I mean, we've covered most of it. I should say almost all of it. The only other thing I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to add this to our conversation, was the talk show aspect as far as the opening of the film. Where, you know, I can't remember the talk show host's name, but the whole idea of that, I guess the spectacle that gets made with murders or violence, anything like that in the news, to where and this is also why I kind of wrote and circled Forgotten People a couple of times.
Yeah.
Is that the cat lady is not just the only forgotten person, right? It's any of the victims of this violence, because in a lot of cases, whether we're talking about mass shooters, school shooters, serial killers, whatever, the story becomes about the aggressor, right?
Right.
And that becomes the focus, whereas I can tell you you know, the names of like seven serial killers. I can't tell you one person, one name of the victims because of the way it's been covered, right?
Yeah.
I already mentioned John Wayne Gacy. I mean, we've got Ted Bundy. You've got Sirhan Sirhan. You got Richard Ramirez. You got all these people, right? But we can't. We tend to always forget the victims.
Yeah. Except for maybe like Sharon Tate. That's basically the only one you can remember.
Right. And it's because of who she was.
Exactly.
And sadly, we forget everyone else that who might have been there only because they weren't as big as Sharon Tate. Right. But, you know, even recently, or I should say within the last 10, 20 years, when we've had these mass shootings or mass murders or anything that takes place, it has transitioned from talking about the aggressors, the murderers, to talking about the victims, even the last few times that there have been mass shootings. There's been a concerted effort by people in social media, like, I'm not sharing the killer's picture, their name, anything like that. You know, let people that were killed, let's talk about their lives because they have families, they have people. And so when this talk show host opens up and seems to be so, you know, interested in the victim and the survivor of the Miles County massacre. She's the sole survivor. And you see this disfigurement of her, right?
Mm-hmm.
You immediately drawn in like, God damn, what the fuck happened? And I started looking. I was like, well, was this in it? Okay, well, this must be a sequel because I was going in blind.
Right.
I'm like, this must be a sequel because this is continuing on from the last movie. I know there are like several movies with art. Okay, well, maybe this is. And by the time this film concludes, you realize, oh, shit, that's the sister because of what happened. But
right.
the talk show host is sitting there and you seem so genuine, so authentic. And I was so glad to see her killed in the way she was killed because mm-hmm. of the way she conducted herself, which was, oh, my God. Oh, ew. Can you imagine? You think she looked bad on TV? Oh, I was sitting right next to her. She was even worse in person. Oh, my gosh. It's just so disgusting. Oh, wait. I think we're going to get some good ratings out of this. This is going to be great. To yeah. where she herself was already forgetting this person and their experience that they had gone under because their usefulness was gone. Mm. Like, I've mm-hmm. gotten what I needed to get out of you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get my ratings. I'm going to move on to the next show. Fuck you. Enjoy your life of disfigurement and trauma and everything that's going on, because when those people go through those traumatic events, it doesn't end when the police happen to put the bracelets on the aggressor or right. the person kills themselves or just dies in a shootout or anything. Right. The trauma they carry continues through the rest of their life. And she has that dual trauma where she has the physical trauma, but then she also has the trauma to her mental health. And again, it's you get to see how this woman who is playing the role of the TV host or the talk show host is basically the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this was a cool story to watch on Dateline. All right, cool. Let me check the next thing. Or I'm watching this show on serial killers on Netflix. Okay, next episode. That was a cool one. I want to see somebody else's fucked up life. You know, and I just love that she does what she does to the talk show host, because not that I want that to happen to anybody in real life, but it makes you think about this woman treated her that way because of what happened to her. And there was no genuine thought about her well-being
right.
or even taking care of her, seeking some assistance for her trauma. It was, I got to use you for my purpose, no differently
ratings.
Than art got to use you.
All about those ratings.
Uh-huh.
I get the best ratings.
James, that you should warn him. Night. We shouldn't start this. We shouldn't start this.
No one gets ratings like me, okay? Art may have killed some people, but it's nothing compared to the death and destruction that I can bring.
That's true. Hashtag. Like almost 300,000.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Hashtag fart the clown. I'm clever. Hashtag. No one's funnier than me.
I can bring us back by doing less.
I want to talk about the end of this really fast. So we have the gun comes back. Mm-hmm. And I think this is great because if you have a gun, you have to fire it. That's the rule, right? Chekhov's gun. If you show a gun early in the story, it better be fired by the end. Well, you show the gun and you fire it right the fuck away. So now we've forgotten about the gun. And I love that. Mm-hmm. Number one, I want to say whenever I talk to my friends about slashers, we're always like, whenever we're writing something, we're like, what's some weapon that's never been used? And I always joke, a gun, you know, but so thanks for ruining that shit.
No, you're welcome.
But no, I love that the gun is shown and then it comes back at the end. We have a gun that he pulls out and he blows his fucking head off.
Yep.
And this is fantastic because now there can never be a sequel and you've just screwed everything. And then we go to the morgue and we get this classic horror trope. And yet it's done so fucking well. Like, it's not just that I read spoilers. Like, the horror fan knows that if there's a morgue scene at the end of the movie, the killer is coming back. It's just been done to death. But the way that, like, the lights flash and the phones going off and all that shit and the reaction on the doctor's face is just fucking great. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, you just get the hand popping up. I loved this so much. And my question, I've read conflicting reports, and I don't know if you can answer this, so feel free to say, I'm not allowed to say that. Did you know... Let me rephrase. Did Art know that he's supernatural, or did he find out when he comes back to life?
I don't know what I can say.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, but, you know, I like to believe that, you know, that was the first time he died.
Cool.
I kind of look at that as, you know, his origin story in some ways. Kind of like that. That's almost like, you know, the Joker falling into the vat of chemicals in a way. So it's like, oh, okay. Now, because I think, you know, because part two picks up right where part one left off. So this is like, I think Art comes back with a little bit more confidence now. It's like, I don't think, like, when he killed himself that he knew that he was going to be able to come back. He was just going, I'm going out on my own terms. Fuck these guys. I'm winning.
Yeah, he's done everything on his own terms, the whole fucking film. There's no reason that it would end any other way.
I'm not giving these cops the satisfaction of killing me. I'm going out on my own. And that's what he did. And then he comes back and like, oh, hell yes.
And back, that's bitches. Exactly what it did for me. It made me go, you just opened this fucking door for Art. Like, he thought that he knew how to terrify people before this. And now, holy shit, look at this new toy. You know, like, I love that. And you don't have to comment any further on that so that you don't get in trouble. But I appreciate you humoring it anyway.
I will say, don't worry that we're going to go crazy places with that. Like, all of a sudden he's going to be levitating shit and warping around. No. We still want to keep it grounded in that way. But it's like, he's definitely durable.
Well, and I mean, I think that you kind of get hints of that, like when he gets stabbed and stuff. Like, it doesn't really slow him down.
No.
You know, and if you stab a straight human killer in any film, it affects them in some way. Right. And so I don't know if that was a purposeful tip to where he was going or not, but I really kind of appreciated how it all pulled together like that.
Yeah, it was definitely cluing you in that there's something extra ordinary about him, but I don't, in some ways, I don't even think he even realized how extraordinary he was.
Yeah,
I think
that's cool.
Well, this is cool. Okay.
that's something I've kind of kept in my mind the whole time. Entire time filming part two is like, he's more confident now. He's like, well, I'm definitely now a force to be reckoned with. No one's going to be able to stop me.
I think that's awesome. Yeah.
It's like the hurricane has been
every morning. Lights flicker and phone goes off. Coffee starts going.
Oh yeah.
It's like, but I mean, that's probably like how you feel if, I don't know, you're brought before Congress and impeached and then nobody fucking does anything. You probably just have like this great new confidence and then you can just fuck the world up more.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that can be that person's downfall too. So they just was like, I'm untouchable, I can do whatever now, and then it comes back to bite him in the ass.
There you go.
I'm not saying that happens in part two, but I'm just saying in general, it's just like, yeah, it's like sometimes that's the when you get too cocky, that's when things go wrong.
Right.
Oh, most definitely.
I think that's what happened this year. It's just like, yep, you know, it's like, you know, if you had just done the job that you were hired to do, you could have been reelected. You were given a great opportunity to show that you can do what, you know, George Bush did with 9/11. This is your 9/11 moment to do something great, to turn things around for yourself in an election year. But you did the exact opposite.
You're it's amazing, like, isn't it?
Oh, my God. It's just like, you did this to yourself, dude. You did it to yourself.
So I don't have anything left in my notes. Don, do you?
No. That was the one thing I want to talk about was the way it was going cool. with the, you know, forgotten people in the TV show hosts. Cool.
I like that you brought that up. No one has ever brought that up before.
Really?
Yeah. No one. I've done so many of these podcasts and, you know, interviews and stuff like that. No one has really ever brought up that character in that way or that that concept. And I think that's I want to address that more with Damien now. And we're like, oh, because that maybe that's something we can address more in future films as well with victims. You know, that whole because that's something people rarely address. You know, they did that a little bit with Scream with Sidney Prescott, you know, but it's like you don't really see that happen a lot where like they really address what goes on with the victim after happily ever after. You know, it's just like what happens to them? Because, you know, that's that kind of stuff is going to mess you up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You are not going to be able to live a normal life surviving something like that. You're always going to be on edge.
Right.
And you can go different routes with that. You can let that destroy you or you can let that, you know, push you to do something greater with your life. And, you know, that's how I looked like when my mom passed away. I've had other friends that, like, when their parents passed away, they got into drugs and alcohol and they went into this self-destructive spiral. And I saw myself starting to go into that spiral, but I was like, no, I want to do something that's going to make her proud. I want to do something to better myself. And that's what I did. So it's that hero's journey. That's what I think is what I would love to explore that with some characters in the future films. It's like, okay, how is this going to affect them after dealing with art?
Definitely. I don't know that there's a better place to end this. So I think we should wrap up there. So my next question for you is, normally we ask people, if people liked this movie, what else do you recommend that they watch? And I'm interested in your point of view because we usually don't get to ask, you know, the Art the Clown of the show. So what, like, did you watch anything? This is my first question. Did you watch anything that kind of got you into this? I know, like, you mentioned The Killing Joke, and I've seen your monologue, which is fucking amazing, by the way. I loved it. But did you watch anything that really helped with this? And do you have anything that you suggest to people who like this movie that you think they should watch as well?
Well, you know, I grew up watching a lot of like silent film movies and physical comedy. I love physical comedy. So I'm a big Mr. Bean fan. So that's, oddly enough, that's where I got most of my inspiration from. Of course, you know, also took a lot from Freddy Krueger as well. So, you know, I, of course, love those movies so much. It's just like, I say like my top five horror films of all time are like Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Original Halloween, Omen, and Exorcist. All great in their own ways. All totally different from each other too, which I think is great. But as for like what I recommend other people see, I mean, there's some great like independent films out there that have been coming out recently. And I love The Babysitter, like I said earlier. Final Girls, which I think is oh my God, that this is a great twist on the genre. That was a fun film. There's films like that. I'm always happy to find new films like that. So it's like, yeah, I like a good horror film that also dabbles in comedy as well, because I think a little comedy in there makes the film better because it takes the audience on a better roller coaster ride, because the funny moments put them at ease so you can scare them again.
Exactly.
And I think it's very, I think comedy and horror work very well together. So I always recommend any kind of like a nice blend of those two.
Beautiful. That's my area right there. So that makes me very happy.
Like Don, Krampus. Love Krampus.
Yes.
That's a fun one. Yes. Oh, my God. I just watched Nostalgia Critic did a recent review of that, and he actually had a Terrifier reference in there, too. I was like, ah!
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's like the moment where they yank the ant out the window, and you hear the little, ah! sound. He's like, yeah, that's the only time you could – that hardly ever works in a horror movie. Maybe like in Terrifier, but anything else, it wouldn't really work in those type of movies. I was like, oh, great.
Oh, man. Don, what movies did you want to recommend?
All right. I didn't really have that much of a list, but one, and it'll make sense when I explain it. But the one film I will say that I think people would like to, if they haven't already watched it, that I would say would be a good one to either follow up with or start off with respect to this film, mm-hmm. Gremlins.
Oh, God, yes.
And
nice. Great Christmas that, film.
And with the time, right?
Yes.
Because of what's in the film and this idea of there's no rhyme or reason why when the gremlins become, you know, the bad ones, why they're doing anything that they're doing. But then they mimic so many things and they have fun and they do a bunch of goofy shit. And mm-hmm. It's setting you up for these cute little things that you think everything's great. They're not going to be problematic. And then all hell breaks loose because people can't follow the rules. Like, even when Dawn and Tara are following the rules, or at least trying to be good people, they still get got, I guess is the way you could say it. And you see the same thing within Gremlins. There are people that are just minding their own fucking business that...
And they go shooting out a window victims. On their little
Well, she had it coming. She
oh
had
yeah
coming.
Of course, yeah. But still,
which, I love that. Again, it was funny when I was a kid. It's still funny now.
Oh God, yeah, it still holds up. It holds up. So, and I understand they're supposed to be doing a third one now, and I'm excited because they said they're going to be doing the puppets. So I'm like, thank you, do not do CG with the Gremlins.
No. No, that would be terrible.
Oh, no. You got to do the puppetry. So much better that way. So much better
that way. Plus, if anything, it tells us from the last few years of some of the Netflix shows and even with Disney Plus's Mandalorian,
mm-hmm.
puppetry is in demand right now mm-hmm. for a lot of these shows because people appreciate it, which, you know, nothing against the prequels with Star Wars.
Yeah.
But there was a big difference between puppet version of Yoda and CGI mm-hmm. Yoda. I love seeing the fight scene with Yoda, but the thing is, he looks so weird after growing up with puppet Yoda.
Yeah.
And, you know, with little Grogu or baby Yoda or, you know, whether mm-hmm. people want to call him that or not, there is something really great about the little puppet that they use for the show because it doesn't take you out of the show.
Exactly. Whereas
if they do go with CGI, which I'm glad they're not, I think that would be... That would be problematic for so many reasons with respect to the Gremlins because it just wouldn't feel right.
No, it's something that's tangible too. You know, it's actually there. It's just like it's because you do have that little disconnect if you realize it or not when it's CG. It's like okay, you don't believe it as much,
right?
Because you know,
I know that's it's just a tennis CG. Ball.
Yeah. It's just like, but it's like when it's, I always like to use that example of Indiana Jones movies with when you have Raiders versus Crystal Skull, you know, Raiders, when he falls in the pit with the snakes. Yeah, you can see the little bit of a reflection of the plexiglass, but he's still face to face with snakes.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you're like, shit. And it has a much more profound effect than CG monkeys and ants. Where you're like, okay, that's obviously fake. It takes you out of the moment. But it's like, oh, God, those are real snakes. Oh. Or with the bugs in Temple of Doom. And it's like, we are going to die. I'm all about, you know, practical effects over CG when you can do it. And please do it. Please do it. Because it's
hire somebody who can.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's so much more effective. It's like one of my favorite sequences ever in a film is the transformation scene in American Werewolf in London.
Okay. Oh,
it's amazing. And that's, I've seen so many werewolf transformations with CG. It's nowhere near as effective.
Yeah, I immediately thought of Wolfman. I think it was Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
Oh, yeah. Maybe
10 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. I saw it. I immediately deleted it from my. I don't remember anything about the movie other than I saw it.
Yeah, I don't because really, it didn't have that effect on me. But that transformation scene was just like, damn, that's amazing. It's just it's so good. I digress.
All right, James, time for you to answer your own question.
All right, I only have two this time. My first one is Dark Ride. I don't know if either of you have seen this, but it's kind of a amusement park slaughter movie.
Ooh, fun.
And I really enjoyed it. I think that it's got some fun kills, and I don't know, it's kind of in the same vein, but not. I don't know how to explain how I'm making this connection here, but just watch Dark Ride. It's fantastic. And then my other recommendation, what's that?
I was saying Carnival and Clowns. I mean.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
My other one is a horrible recommendation, and you should not take my advice on this, but Killjoy.
Oh,
Killjoy
yeah.
is just so much fucking fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's a terrible movie, and we showed it in a theater with, like, 10 of our friends, and we had the best fucking night watching this film because we were just dying laughing and, like, there's a part where the clown runs through blood and leaves a bloody footprint, and somebody else is like, "Motherfucker's got big shoes," you know, like just like that level of film.
Even bad horror can be really good horror in that way. It's like Trolls 2, which is like, this is so goofy, but it's so much fun to watch at the same time. It's like, another film I go back. It's like I would also recommend Haunt. The movie Haunt. Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed that. I was like, because, you know, some people compare that to Hellfest, and I thought Haunt did it so much better because Haunt was actually looked like a real haunt that you would see. And it made it more relatable. It's like, I could see someone actually creating this thing in some, you know, out in, you know, some, you know, like, you know, small town or something like that. As opposed to like an amusement park haunted house place. It was like, and I loved Haunt. Not just because my friend Damien Maffei's in it, but still, I thought it was a fun movie. I was like, wow, this is really good. This is good.
Very cool.
And it's an independent film as well.
That's always important. We have to keep pushing those.
Yeah.
As much as we're glad people watch the Bird Boxes of the world, watch everything else too. It's the only way we're going to keep getting different stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Not just different stuff, but good stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, David, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find online? And I know you don't have details on when Terrifier 2 is coming out yet, but you're definitely welcome to come back and talk about it when it's out, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrifier 2. We're almost done. Like I said earlier. So once we get editing done, we're gonna try to get into find distribution for it, and then we'll see what happens. I think we're even talking about possibly doing a roadshow with it, kind of like what Kevin Smith did with the Jay and Silent Bob movie recently. You know, a lot of that's gonna be COVID dependent. You know, whatever's going on with vaccines and stuff like that. So we'll see how that goes. But we want to get it out to you guys as soon as possible because we can't wait for everybody to see it. It's such a fun film. It's like the trailer doesn't even tell you anything about the movie, which I love. I think Damon did a great job with that trailer. It's like it gets people hyped, but it doesn't spoil anything, which is great. I'm like, yes. So I can't wait for everybody to see that. I'm also going to be filming another film with several of the Terrifier people with our Fuzz and Lens guys. They're starting up their own, hopefully, franchise. They did another film I'd recommend. It's called Abnormal Attraction, which is hysterical. I would say you find that on Amazon Prime or, you know, other platforms as well. But this film is going to be called Stream. And it's a cool idea. I'm playing one of the killers in it, which is going to be a lot of fun. And it's a great concept. I wish I could say more, but we're casting a lot of names from the horror community in it. Very as cool. well. So I can't really reveal too much about it. You can probably look up some of the names on IMDb, but it's going to be fun. I'm excited. I start filming that in January. So I'm excited. But you can find me on Facebook and Instagram under David Howard Thornton. I'm on there. So, yep. Cool. I'm not on Twitter anymore, so
I don't blame you.
I got in trouble. I said a certain someone should be tarred and feathered when he invited the Taliban to Camp David on 9/11. So I was just like, yeah, and they kicked me off for that.
Really?
For a metaphor. I'm like, no, I didn't mean he should actually be tarred and feathered. It means, you know, anybody knows the expression, means to be publicly ostracized for it.
Right.
You should be called out on his bullshit. And like, this is a hard. But no, someone thought I meant that. I'm like, oh, jeez, people are stupid.
I mean, it's a good thing you didn't go on there and like incite violence. And,
Oh, no. That's what got me kicked off Twitter. I was like, are you freaking? I tried appealing it, but you know, when you do the appeals on there, you're talking to an algorithm. You're not talking to a human being. So it's not, algorithms don't know what metaphors are.
Right.
So
ain't that the truth?
Yep.
Man. Well, that sucks. Yep. All right. Well, thank you for doing this. I sincerely appreciate it. And I had a blast and I can't wait to see the second one. So
there's going to be so much more to talk about.
Awesome.
Oh, especially our new heroine in this. Oh, I can't wait to talk about her.
Cool. Yeah. That sounds great.
Y'all going to love her.
All right. So I guess that wraps it up for this week. So as always, I am James Sabata.
And I'm Don Guillory.
And we will see you next week here at thenecronama.com.